Today is January 23rd, our last class in Masechet Brachot, Sunday morning. We are covering Perek Tshi'i, the last chapter, which is chapter 9. We'll be doing Mishnayot Dalet and Hey, Mishnayot 4 and 5. We just want to do a short review of the earlier parts of this Perek, of the chapter that we did. So if you're looking at Perek Tshi'i, right from over here, from the beginning, just remember it began with Haroe Makom Shenasuvo Nisim Yisrael. He who sees a place that were done there, miracles for Yisrael.
Yeah.
And it says, you say a bracha, Baruch Shasa Nisim Lavotenu B'Makom Hazeh. It was about saying a bracha over a place, over an event that happened in the past that we are satisfied and happy about. The second Mishnah, which is on the next column, began by saying al zikin v'al zvaot v'al brakim v'al ra'amim v'al ruchot omer baruch shekocho ugvurato malei olam, concerning these natural phenomena like lightning and thunder and strong winds, you say a bracha that thanks acknowledges God's activity. And it said later on hills and valleys you also say, and on rivers and on bodies of water you say a bracha. Over the great sea you say a bracha. And at the end of that Mishnah, the end of Mishnah Bet, it had said in the last 2.5 lines, it had said, Al Bisarot Tovot, on good news you say a bracha, Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv, and on Shmur Tra'ot, and on bad news you say a bracha, Baruch Dayan Emet, say a bracha. So it turns out that both on natural phenomena and on historical phenomena, you say a bracha. Right? These natural things are certainly created by God, but even the historical events, things that happen between people, whether good or bad, you also say a bracha. Then the beginning of Mishnah Gimel.
This news you're talking about, that's not just something that's being reported contemporaneously, but something you hear about that happened in the past?
No. You just got the news that a child was born for you. You just got the news that a relative died.
Okay.
Somebody died. You say Baruch Dayan Emet.
You say Baruch Dayan Emet.
It may have been an hour ago, or it may have been 2 weeks ago, or a month ago, if it took that long for the news to get to you.
I think he's saying. By the word history.
But it's not. That was the earlier, I think, right. The historic.
For the phenomenon.
Well,
for the place where there was a... Isn't that what you were saying?
Well, I thank you for pointing out that what I said wasn't clear. Right. I use the word history... In exactly history in the sense of human phenomena, whether 100 years ago or 5 minutes ago, perhaps I should have used a different word, human phenomena, and then I took that natural phenomena. So when I took that historical, I meant both what David just said, you see a place that Abu Dazara was uprooted, or you see a place that Nisim were done 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago, or you get good news or bad news, these are, I use the word historical, human phenomena. You say a bracha, and you also say a bracha, like you said, for natural phenomena like winds and mountains and rain, and lightning and thunder. The beginning of Mishnah Gimel, Bana Bayit Chadash, V'kana Chilim Chadashim, Omer Baruch Shechianu. If you built a new house, or bought new furniture, new vessels, new clothing, that's all included in the word Kilim, he said the Baruch Shechianu. And that first line of Mishnah Gimel really relates to the previous Mishnah. It's about saying a bracha for events that happen in your life. It's not the same thing as good news and bad news, but it's again something that happened in your life. If you got good news, you say Atov Meitiv, but if you bought something yourself, then you say Baruch Shechianu. Then the next line of Mishnah Gimel begins a certain summary or perspective on what was learned earlier. And the way we should read the next lines of Mishnah Gimel, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, is the following. I'm going to read slowly and grammatically correct. Mivarech al hara'a mi'eina tova ve al hatova mi'ein hara'a ve Hatzoek l'sheavar, harei zot filat shav. In other words, translation, He who blesses on the bad, as if it's good, and blesses on the good, as if it's bad, and someone who prays a supplicatory prayer, tzoek, a supplicatory, in other words, a filat vakasha, that's what tzoek means, lishavar, things that already happened, harei zo tfilat shav. Behold, all these three categories are a tfilat shav. They are a vainful, meaningless, ridiculous prayer. Now, that statement relates back to, it's a perspective on, the halakha given in the previous Mishnah. The previous Mishnah said, you say a bracha for the good, and you say a bracha for the bad. However, there were two different brachot. It wasn't the same bracha for good and bad, two different brachot. Which would mean that although you bless for the good and you bless for the bad, you do it with a different mindset. You don't have the same mindset, you don't have the same relationship to God when you hear the bad news as when you get the good news. It's a different mindset. It's still a bracha. You still acknowledge that everything comes from God in some sense, which we'll talk about, but it's not that you're relating to the bad as if it's good, or the good as if it's bad. No, each is a separate time in your life, a separate experience in your life, and it's legitimate and it's proper, and we're told to relate to them differently. But if someone relates to the bad like the good and the good to the bad, that is a tfilat shav. That's an improper prayer. Another improper prayer is a tzoek l'shavah. If you supplicate, if you have a vakasha, if you request concerning the avar, avar is past, which obviously comes to tell us that you have to recognize that God works within the framework that He created. And the world that He created, the past doesn't change. Of course, as we learned in Rav Kook a few weeks ago, you can understand the past differently and you can process it for the future, for what it's going to affect you in the future. Right. But on a simple level, as far as events go, don't pray to have the past changed. Because God doesn't do miracles as a result of your prayer. And then it gives an example. Ketzad, what is a tefillat shav for the past? I'm reading at the end of the third line of this Mishnah. Ketzad, how so? Haita ishto mu'uberet. Was his wife pregnant? Meaning his wife was pregnant. Vamar, yehi ratzon sheteled ishti zachar. And he said, as a supplicatory prayer to God, yehi ratzon, may it be God's will, that my wife give birth to a zachar, to a boy. Harezot filatcha. Behold, it's a filatcha, because Chazal knew that it was already decided 9 months earlier whether the child is a male or a female. And even though you didn't use the words, the form words of a prayer, Bruchat Hashem, you just said Yehi Ratzon, still Chazal say that that is an improper prayer, a filatcha, and you shouldn't be speaking like that. Another example, Hayaba Bederech, he was coming on the way, coming home from a long journey. V'shama kol tzvacha be'ir, and he heard the sound of commotion in the city. He hears a robbery going on. God forbid. V'amar, yehi ratzon shelo yu elu b'nei biti. May it be God's will that these aren't the householders of mine. What's going on? It's not
that,
in my house.
That's not a tefillah. Is that a tefillah?
The Mishnah is calling it a tefillah. It's not a tefillah.
He just says, I don't want this to happen
sense.
In my house.
He's not saying Shem Hashem.
Not saying Shem Hashem, but you said Yehi Ratzon.
He Shem Hashem, yeah.
You said Yehi Ratzon. That's enough in this sense to make it into a tefillah.
Yeah.
And since the content of it is that you hope that something's already, that's already happening is not fashion X but fashion Y, that is also a tefillah shav. Which means we have to be very careful, because as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, if we think about it, there are probably lots of things that we would pray about, we do pray about, that really are already determined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the sex of a baby.
That's clear from here.
Yeah.
But even if someone says, you know, Yehi Ratzon, that my daughter is not out in the wrong place tonight, 11 at night, well, she's there already.
Right.
Yeah, that she's there already. She is or she isn't.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so even that would be a tefillat shav.
Yeah.
If it's 11 o'clock, pray for 12 o'clock, but not for 11 o'clock.
Pray for 11 o'clock.
but not for 11 o'clock. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to do that. Yeah. My kids grew up.
I'm sure we all did or will.
No need to mention any details here.
Yeah.
So it comes out that a lot of the prayers
I still do.
It's not getting interrupted.
A lot of the prayers that people daven for are really sharp. That's what it comes out.
Yeah. We really, this is quite important.
Okay. Big children, yeah. You'll find out later.
Yeah.
Regarding Tefillah Shav, Gams, Shlomo Melech had a ring called Gam that said Gamzu Yavor. I think Shlomo Melech had a ring. Gamzu Yavor. This will also pass.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the brachas of the saying bracha on good when it's good and bad when it's bad. I mean, it sort of seems like maybe Shlomo Melech had a different perspective a little bit. Gamzu Yavor. That was his outlook on it.
But when you say Gamzu Yavur, also this will pass, you're recognizing that what is happening now is happening. You're just hoping that in the future it will pass. But that certainly recognizes that the present is what it is.
This is really a prayer for the future. Yeah,
yeah, right. Yeah. But Mr. Gala said, when I say Gamzu Yavur, it's like saying, well, I know my daughter at 10 o'clock is wherever she is, but I hope at 11 o'clock, Yavur, it'll pass.
Right? I hope she's not out with the wrong guy.
Yeah.
I hope that she won't still be out with the wrong guy another hour. Right? So I don't think there's a contradiction.
I think it's also teaching us to take advantage of what we can control. Make sure that we do everything that's within our power to make sure that our daughter, you know, behaves or and not just have wishful thinking.
Okay, that's a good point. This Mishnah would help us or cause us to delineate what is and what is not within, you said our power, I would say God's power,
yes.
But eventually it also comes back to understanding what is changeable, what is not changeable.
Yeah. Right? There's a tension though, it seems like, because these kind of tefillot are very emotional and very sensitive, and this forces you to think rationally.
Mm-hmm. I agree with what you're saying. Very much. Very much. Okay.
What Eric was bringing last week with the Bart Nura and Rambam, or 2 weeks ago, about, you know, even though this is good, and wow, you know, it might lead to something bad, or even though this is bad, it might lead to something good. Nevertheless, we're saying Atova Metiv or Bruch Dayan Emes for what happens now.
Right.
It
is what it is now.
With a full heart.
Exactly. We have to look at things as they are, and not with wishful thinking what they will or will not be, but as they are.
Mm-hmm. That's actually been very helpful to me since we had that class.
Oh, great. Good.
To like just really get into the present. Really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. That's something that might be spoken about at the Siyum. Okay. The next Mishnah is the last line of the page in our printing of the Mishnah here of the Alvik edition, Mishnah Dalet. And we'll be going on, of course, to the next page, and this line ends. Hanichnas Likrach Mitpalel Shtayim. Okay, I'll read that again. Hanichnas Likrach Mitpalel Shtayim. He who enters a krach, which is a ir gdola, a big city.
A big city.
Maybe where there's some danger.
Exactly. And the assumption is that in big cities there's big danger. Apparently, as we'll see. Mitpalel Shtayim says to tefillot when you enter a big city. When you get off the plane getting into New York, you never know, and especially if with your young kids, you never know what's going to happen. Smit palel shtayim. Echat b'chnisato, ve'echat b'yitziato. One at his entrance, and one at his exit.
So which is the entrance? What is he saying by the entrance?
So when you enter into city, there's two tefillot you will be saying. One of them is when you first come in, and one when you leave. Now we can already guess probably what the nature of these two tefillot are. Since we've been told in what we've read so far, that you pray for something to happen only before it happens, whereas after something happens, what you do, as we saw, whether it's Avodah Zarah that was uprooted, or Nisim that were done, or thunder or lightning, you acknowledge what already has happened. So we can imagine that when you enter a city, you say a prayer of Yehi Ratzon. Let it be God's will that such and such will or will not happen. Let it be God's will that I don't be molested or mugged in this city, right? Or that I make a good business deal in this city, whether it's a tefillah that it's negative or positive, that it shouldn't happen or should happen. When I leave the city, I see a tefillah of thank God that I wasn't molested, or that I made my business deal. In other words, the tefillah at the knesah is going to be a tefillah of tzaka. Remember that word tzaka?
Bakasha, I mean.
Which is bakasha. Soek l'shavar. You never soek. You never make a bakasha on shavar. But you do make a bakasha la'atid, for the future. Whereas when you leave the city, that's when you probably make a tefillah like in Mishnah Aleph and Bet, recognizing something that already happened, whether it's thunder or lightning, or more to our point, something that happened historically, right? Nisim Avodah Zarah that was
uprooted.
So I say that thank God that I wasn't molested.
Or if you had a negative experience, you'd say Dayana Met, maybe.
That could be. That's I didn't think of that, but you're right.
Or beaten up because he's a Jew, maybe.
Could anyone think of the word in Hebrew that I use after I have experienced good and I thank God for it? What's the one Hebrew word that the prayer begins with?
Oh, your wife said he... Oh, no, Gomel, I was going to say. No, that's not...
Experience
good. I don't mean a specific prayer.
Oh.
I mean any prayer that acknowledges God for the good that was done to me.
Hodah?
Yeah, Modeh Ani.
Modeh Ani.
Whether it's the Modeh Ani we say upon waking up, or it's the Modim, which is the plural that we say in Shmona Asrei, this tefillah upon one's Yitziyah is going to be Modeh Ani. I acknowledge.
It could also be Atop and Matif.
Or I think maybe too.
It got blessed him and he is safe. He's safe. He gets out of the city.
Yeah.
They make it Baruch Atop and Matif.
We'll see the exact wording of it. I'm just giving some basic introduction.
God saved them in the big city.
Okay, let's go on to continuation of the Mishnah.
It's just an exchange.
We'll see inside when we get to it. Yeah. Now we continue on to the next page, and it says, Ben Azai Omer. I think Mr. Galler has the next page. You have the next page.
The next page, Ben Azai Omer. Yeah, I have.
Ben Azai Omer.
That page I have.
Arba. In other words, it's not Shtaim, it's Arba. It's not two, it's four. Filot. Shtaim b'chnisato, v'shtaim b'yitziato. Two on his entrance, and two on his exit. Okay?
Yeah.
So, I want to stop for a second and take note of the literary and thematic parallels between this Mishnah and that which came earlier. Okay? This Mishnah, Mishnah Dalet, and that which came earlier. So let's look. Mishnah Dalet began and said, someone who enters a big city, mitpalel shtayim, says two tefillot. It was the bottom of the previous page. Does that relate at all to the previous chapter? The previous Mishnayot of the chapter we're in. Well, I already said
they all say on certain events say a prayer. Mm-hmm. In that sense, it's parallel to that. What it's doing, it's giving a different example.
Yes.
It's the concept it's also, it puts on the table that you have two different brachot for two different events. You have for the good or the bad, and here you have for the kenisa and the yitzia. Mm-hmm. You have that concept on the table.
Let's be more specific. A specific word. Right? The word krach, we said, is a ir gdola. It's a big city. The reason I said that is because the word ir appeared right before that. Earlier, it had said that if you, a line right before this, haya babaderet, you were coming on the way, shema kol tzvacha b'ir, and you heard commotion, crying in the city. And it said you shouldn't pray for what's already going on. Mm. Rather pray for the future. So anichnas the krach is the exact same situation as what it said earlier, that you're coming on the way and you hear crying going on in the city. Situation of you're coming into the city. And what are you going to say? What type of tefillot are you going to say? So the previous Mishnah said what type of tefillot you don't say when you come into the city. Uh-huh. You don't say a tefillah al sha'avar.
Right.
On the past. Which means you do say a tefillah shalatid, on the atid.
Yeah.
And that's why I said that when it says you say one when you come in, one when you go out, so the one when you come in is going to be obviously Yehi Ratzon, concerning the future, not the past.
Which is the same one that it tells you not to say.
Exactly.
Right.
What the Mishnah that came previously said you don't say concerning things that already happened, you do say concerning things that are about to happen.
You should bring me into the city in peace.
Right. In other words, let's think of it even further now. You walk into the city. The previous Mishnah said, don't think about the past. Right? You heard crying going, don't think about
it.
In God's terms, don't pray for that. Rather, the absolute conclusion is going to be, think about the future. In other words, we're being told now, when you focus... Let me say it differently. Right. When you enter into a new situation, have your eyes forward on the future and not, or in the present, you're right, and not back on the past.
What's controllable and changeable.
Exactly. The exact same points that we saw previously and that Brooks summarized, that this Mishnah is continuing on in that same fashion.
I got two questions. The first question is why... Karach and Wayir, two different words ideally for the same entity? Two different authors?
It very well might be that these are statements made in different Batei Midrash to be put together by the editor.
So my second question is, in this Mishnah, we are bracketing an event with brachot a priori. We're saying upon... risk or event, and then upon exiting from the risk or event, in all the other Mishnayot, it's one bracha only. It's a different formalism.
You're right. And this is really a way of, I think, emphasizing the same point of looking, when you look at the future, you say a prayer of the vakasha type, and when you look at the past, you say a prayer of the Hoda'ah type, of the acknowledgement type. And we're being told to keep those two things separate. You know, relate to God's world concerning the past with thanks and acknowledgement, concerning the future with supplication, but do not get those mixed up. You don't supplicate concerning the past.
So it's either a recapitulation of the previous Mishnayot in the sense of exactly that, because you're saying one event, the future, and the observation of the past, while the other ones were, you know, one-ofs. This puts it all together.
This is the first Mishnah that's going to talk about supplication, right? None of the Mishnayot that we talked about here talked about supplication, except in the sense of when you shouldn't supplicate. But now it's finally telling us when you should supplicate, which is when you're entering the city and you're thinking of the future. To see this more clearly, we'll have to look in the explanation of what the tefillot actually are. So for that, we look in the Braita. We'll see the Braita either in the Tosefta or in the Yerushalmi. It's quoted in the Tosefta and it's quoted in the Yerushalmi. I photostated both of them here. We really want to look at more. Let's look in the Tosefta. The Tosefta.
Have you given it up before?
I gave it up before, yeah.
You mean last week?
No, I mean...
it's in that packet.
An hour ago.
Is that it?
It should be right in front of you, in your hands, if you took a packet.
I didn't take
a
packet.
Oh, we passed it around. Yeah.
There you go. I just took that one sheet.
I have that. Last time.
There's one big difference here that I see is between this Mishnah and the previous. This, he's traveling. He's not in a spot. He's traveling into a city. He's traveling out of a city. He's in a different type of mode.
The previous Mishnah said someone who is traveling, right? And this one also says someone who is nichnas. Like the last third of Mishnah Gimel, last fourth, I should say, Hayava Bederech. He was coming on the way.
Bederech v'shamakom.
So it really does seem to be the same scenario. Okay, let's look now in the Tosefta. This is Brachot. You can see the top of the page, Brachot, right?
Yeah. Or that could mean he's actually finishing his travel. The Baba Derech, he's coming, he's finishing his travel. Or wherever it could be, yeah. He's traveling still.
Right. So this is the 16th Braita in the 6th Perek of Brachot. And it says in my brackets, right, this is in the Tosefta, you're in the Yerushalmi, basically the same thing. But anyway, you can look in the Tosefta, you have it now.
This one.
Right? Hanichnas lekrach, the same words we have in our Mishnah. Mitpalel shtayim, just like in our Mishnah. Echat b'chnisato, one at his entrance, v'chat b'tziyato, just like our Mishnah, it's word for word. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, Arba, four. Whereas our Mishnah said, Ben Azai Omer, right?
Yeah, the Mishnah says, Shtayim, Viknesusa.
So just switch the names, Uzi.
Except that it's the same name, because his name is Rabbi Shimon Ben Azai.
Ben Azai, that's his last name.
It's the same name of Shimon, yeah.
Right, okay.
And when it says, Hanan says it, it says, Schlesinger says, but it's the same person.
Right.
Rabbi Shimon Omer Arba, Shtayim b'chnisato, u'shtayim b'yitziyato. So it's exact same words, exact same thing, word for word, except for the different usage of first name and last name.
B'chnisato
mahu Omer. The Bright, of course, goes and explicates further than the Mishnah. And we've seen this hundreds of times. This relationship between Mishnah and Braita. The Braita simply says more. The Mishnah, when it was edited, only took those parts of the Braita which were extremely important, and it left out that which it didn't have to say. Why didn't it have to tell you what the tefillah actually is? Because it assumed everyone knew it. So we have here in the Tosefta, we unfortunately don't know the content of the tefillot, and it says, "Bichnisato mahu omer." What is it that he says? Yehi ratzon. Milefanecha, Hashem Elokai, the God of my fathers, Sheikanes Lishon, that I will, right, like Mr. Geller emphasized, I will enter in peace. Yeah. You only say your Hiratzon on the future.
The Yerushalmi, I think, has that Hashem should enter me in peace, cause me to enter or something, right?
Pretty similar.
Yeah. I should enter the peace.
This means like he's standing outside the walls and he's about to walk in.
Don't
clock
me over the head as I walk in.
Yeah. Nobody should throw a stone at you.
Listen up.
Nichnas l'shalom.
If you already got in peace, in other words, you said your first filah and you got in peace.
The second filah is that you already got in. Yeah.
So when it says nichnas l'shalom, that is the scenario. He was already nichnas l'shalom. What do you say? Omer. See the abbreviation? Aleph of. That's Omer. Modeh. Modeh ani lefanecha Hashem Elokai. Lodot. Modeh means to acknowledge or to thank. It's the same word in Hebrew. I acknowledge before you, God of my father, shehichnastani l'shalom, that you brought me in peace. And you add to that,
so this is considered b'knisata. This is the second one
of the entrance. Right. This is the second one Yeah. Upon entering, according to the Nazai, there's two upon entering. According to the Tanakhama, there's only one. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Tanakhama only had the first blessing and not the second. Right. He only had the Hiratzon, didn't have the Modeh. But Rabbi Shimon says you say Modeh immediately after getting in. And first you thank God for getting in peace, then you add, Ken Yehi Ratzon Milefanecha, Hashem Elokai, Shetotzi Eini Lishalom.
You should let get me out in peace. Yeah.
What's it? This is it.
Wait a second. I want to point out that the second half of the page is what's called the critical apparatus. The critical apparatus, my finger is. And this is where the editor, Professor Harav Shul Lieberman, collected all of the different Shinuyei Girsaot, the textual variants from different manuscripts. Mm. And we use a certain nomenclature that's a little hard, I'm not going to teach you right now, to explain what he's saying. But the one thing I do want to point out is where my arrow is. Mm-hmm. And the arrow points to the word Cain. Mm-hmm. It's the word Cain that I just read. The big end of the third line that we just read.
Cain, yeah.
Right? And then after the Cain is a vertical line, which separates the Dibur Matril from what the editor is saying. And then there's a big Aleph. The Aleph is a letter that's given to one of the four or five different manuscripts that are being drawn upon in the apparatus. And in manuscript number Aleph, or I should say concerning manuscript Aleph, it says Chet Samech Resh Chaser, missing. In other words, in manuscript Aleph, the word Cain is missing. Uh-huh. In manuscript Aleph, the word Cain is missing. I want to go back now to the text above that we're reading and leave out the word Cain. Mm-hmm. Leave out the word Cain. So what did we just read? We read, and it's helpful to use the line numbers that the editor gave us. This is line 75. Mm-hmm. We had learned in line 75 that Nichnas l'shalom, you entered in peace. You say, Modeh ani, thank God that I got in peace. Then we get to the last three words of the line, and we're leaving out the word Cain. Leaving out the word Cain, right? So we have now two words on the line. Yehi Ratzon.
Milefanecha. Misses some words there. It misses.
What's the meaning of taking out that one word?
We missed the...
Wait a second. What is it? What's the great significance of taking out that one word?
It's one tefillah.
That with the word Cain, it was one tefillah. I said, thank God for letting me in peace, and so may it be. There was one tefillah. Take out the word Cain, it's a new tefillah.
Yeah. You have a period, tefillah. In other words, instead of the Cain,
but in
a
period, instead of a comma. Yeah. And the new tefillah is, so it comes out to be the third tefillah, Akshav. The third tefillah now. Yehi ratzon milefanecha. Hashem Elokai. May it be the will before God of my father. Shetotzi eini l'shalom. That you get me out of here in peace.
Right.
Now there's a third tefillah. The first was, God, get me in peace. That was a supplication. The second was, thank God for getting me in peace. The third is, God, get me out of here in peace. And the fourth is, Yatzah l'shalom, if you went out in peace. Right? Yatzah l'shalom, what do you do when you left in peace? Omer, you say, Modeh ani lefanecha, Hashem Elokai, I thank before you, God of my father. That you got me out of here in peace. Kain yehi ratzon, may it be the will before you. Milefanech Hashem Elokai, God of my father, shetigieni la mikomi lishon, that you bring me to my place in peace. You got me out of here in peace, so let me continue the way. In other words, when we took out that word Cain, we saw here four tefillot. One before I went in, God, get me in peace. That's a vakasha, that's a tzaka, that's a supplication. The next is, when you got in peace, God, thanks for getting me in peace. The third is, when you're in there, God, get me out of here in peace. That's the third. And the fourth is, once you got out, God, thanks for getting me out in peace. And you can also add to that, and once you got me out of here in peace, please help me get
then
where I'm going.
Then you say another prayer.
Right.
Help me to reach.
But the point is, again, we're always distinguishing between lishavar and latid. Between prayers on the past, which are thanks, and prayers on the future, which are supplication. That's the whole point of the whole thing. To distinguish, and like Brooks said it so well much earlier, this whole chapter of Mishnah is about distinguishing of what is in control of us and God and what's not in our control. Certain things you can only acknowledge, but other things you can actually change.
Just can you make a little clear what the word king actually means?
So, like that, so this.
My question would be, if you read it with the cane in...
Then there's only three tefillot.
Then there's only three, right. So it doesn't, the version doesn't go
right.
Well.
Right. In the Yerushalmi...
That's the Chiddush of...
Right, in the Yerushalmi, there are four clearly without any change of the text. Okay. So with that, we can go back to the Mishnah. We can go back to the Mishnah.
I don't know if it's relevant to anything we're saying, but certainly not to the main point. But if you just said, when you enter a city, say two prayers, you could have imagined that you finished a journey that's dangerous. And so the first prayer could be, oh, a thanks prayer that I've finished my journey safely. But that's not mentioned here, or as far as I see.
Yeah, Birchasa Gomel, right?
No, it's mentioned here, David said.
It's not mentioned here.
No, that's what I'm saying. We said Birchasa Gomel, we said the Birchasa
Gomel. Well, it just says here, when I just...
Yeah.
Is that what that's for, I guess? I mean, this is reading in a different way. This is, if that were true, then... When you, the thankful prayer would be saying that. It's not. It sort of doesn't even acknowledge that prayer, does it? That's a separate point.
Well, it's not mentioned here. I guess it could have been mentioned, right? As those prayers that are hoda'ah al lishava, that are thanks for the past, it could have mentioned Birchat HaGomel. It would have fit here, but...
I guess I'm trying to say, the Mishnah doesn't say what these prayers are.
The Mishnah doesn't say.
The commentary is saying what those prayers are. Is that uniformly the view?
No,
that it's
not exactly, because we always have to remember that although the Braytot were edited into literary units after the Mishnah, the individual Braytot represent pre-Mishnaic material.
Right.
So it's not a commentary, the original source. Uh-huh. And the Mishnah is simply a summary, not a summary, but it...
It's an editorial.
What's the word? When you take something and only bring it... It's an abbreviation.
A gloss.
The Mishnah is abbreviation. No, it's not a gloss, because it uses the same words as the bright. It's an abbreviation.
But don't we have a problem with the number attributed to Ben Azai? Because Ben Azai Omer, Abba Shtaim B'Chinisato, Shtaim B'Yetziato, in the version that Professor Lieberman brings, it seems like there's Shlosha, or Shalosh B'Chinisato, and Echad B'Yetziato.
I understand what you're saying, but I think the simple answer to that is, what does it mean at his Knesset and at his Yitzhak?
Yeah.
You're taking a temporal sense.
Right.
I can take it in a thematic sense.
Okay.
That there are two about his Knesset and two about his Yitzhak. So in other words, the third one might not be right before the Yitzhak, but it's about the Yitzhak. Get me out of here in peace. Even if I say it 5 days before the Yitzhak, it's about the Yitzhak.
Right.
Right. It's concerning the Yitzhak, concerning the exit from here. Yeah. So in that sense, the Braytot are not debatable commentaries. They are the original, most probably the original understanding of the material itself.
I think, probably, thinking about what came before the prayers. I think what's at issue here is what's sandwiched between the prayers. I mean, I'm kind of reading between the lines, but having something like going into a city, and we're talking about the prayers before and after, I think leaves room for what we do when we're not praying. It's important to that. There's a place, there's a time for action, and
I think that's good. Whereas these prayers are not in place of life, they're about life. So there has to be a life to pray about.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Like, it shows that, obviously, in between the prayers, he's doing something. He's not
praying all day.
Right.
Like, I was thinking about this pilot who saved that airline, by landing it in the Hudson, and how, at the moment that they realized that the engines were out, that's a time he had to start flipping the switches and making decisions and, communicating with the pilots in the tower and all of this thing. Everyone else is praying, okay? Maybe he made prayers on takeoff. And maybe once he landed it, safely or not safely, he'd pray. But there's a point where, you have to take action. It still might be in God's hands. But that's not a point. That's not the time where you need to be talking to God.
And even on the plane, the passengers have to pay attention to the flight crew.
That's true too.
Think, mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good. Great. Right. There's one other thing I want to say about this Mishnah, which is that let's look at a global understanding. This Mishnah, as well as the previous Mishnah that we've seen, are about bringing God into daily life. For certain, right? It's about daily life. Like Brooke said, you're living. You're not praying all day. You're not in the Beit Midrash. You're going in and out. Things are happening to you. There's robbers and there's bandits and there's his wife is pregnant and he's coming into the city, out of the city, he's doing business. So life is going on. But it's about bringing God's presence, or at least bringing about the memory of God's presence, the understanding of God's presence, the consciousness of God's presence into your daily life through these brachot. But there's a tension here. At the same time that you are bringing the consciousness of God's presence into your life, we're told to do it in a very, very critical fashion. It doesn't mean that you should bring God into changing the past.
Oh, that's keeping God out, I would say, right?
Exactly. It's about bringing God in, but in a critical fashion.
Yeah.
It's also about keeping God out of the places he can't be. Right. God can't be in the past.
Yeah.
So it's really, we're walking here a fine line of developing a religious consciousness, but still a critical and rational religious consciousness. So it's really about a balance between a secularized worldview that would have God involved in nothing, and a magical or a mystical view that would have God involved in things that we believe he can't be involved in, like changing the past.
Maybe even pantheistic view. This could be a critique on.
I don't know if that's really the word here.
Okay. Kind of involved in the past nature. All
right. Okay. Yeah, so that's important, I think. That's a critical theme here. Okay. We're going on to
That's the way you meant critical. You said bring God in a critical way.
Critical and such rational of thinking about where God can be and where God cannot be.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to say.
In other words, God's not everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. To be religious doesn't mean to be...
To believe in magic.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we have to finish up the Mishnah. The Mishnah has an ending that was not found in the Braita. The Braita in the Tosefta didn't have this ending. The ending says, "Venoten hoda'a l'sha'avar, v'tzoek latid lavo." Give hoda'a, and again, hoda'a is acknowledgement or thanksgiving, l'sha'avar in the past, v'tzoek latid lavo, and supplicate for the future. A beautiful summation of keeping your category straight, right? When you bring God into your life, as you should, but keep the category straight. Mm-hmm. When you talk about the past, it's about thanksgiving or acknowledgement. When it's about the future, then it's about sa'aka. Then it's about supplication. Don't get those mixed up. Mm. However, there's a little problem here. This summation seems to be out of order. It says, give thanks for the past and
supplicate for the future. Mm-hmm. Now, why do I say it's out of order? Because if it's relating to the Mishnah we just read, mm-hmm. in the Mishnah began with the future mm-hmm. and then went to the past. When you come into a city, pray that you will come in peace. And when you get in, give thanks that you got in peace. It begins with the future and it goes to the past.
Yeah.
That's what the Mishnah does. Whereas the summation begins with the past and goes on to the future. That leads me to the following conclusion. That this is not a summation of the Mishnah. It's a summation of the whole chapter. If it was just this one Mishnah that is being summarized, it should have begun with So'ek Latid Lavo. Uh-huh. Supplicate for the future, which is what the Mishnah began with. Then it should have said Notein Hoda L'Shavah. And then it said give thanks for the past. So it's not summarizing just this Mishnah. It's summarizing everything we've learned. And in the context of everything we learned, well, the first 2.5 Mishnayot talked about blessings for things that happened, the past. Whether it was miracles that were done, or Avodah Zarah that was uprooted, or thunder and lightning, or whether it's rivers, or whether it's good news and bad news, it was about Hoda'ah, acknowledgement for the past. Yeah. And then in Mishnah Gimel, it started talking about Yehi Ratzon, prayers for the future, and it said, don't do them for the past, only for the future. Mishnah Dalid explicitly said, there are things for the past and for the future. So the summation doesn't come to sum up just the Mishnah, mm-hmm. but in general, the principle is, of everything we've learned, it's not summarizing just this Mishnah, but the overall principle, that you give acknowledgement for the past, and you supplicate for the future.
Which may explain why it's not in the Braita, right?
Which, exactly, yeah. exactly. It's only in the Mishnah, because it comes to summarize not the particular unit that we learned as a particular Mishnah, but the whole set of material.
May I argue?
Yes, sir.
May I argue that Dalet starts with Hanichnas Lekarach, entering the city, is the far less risky thing than you just completed a voyage to the city. And it should
But the rabbi proved to us that regardless of the ambiguity in the mission itself, it's yeah. clear that it has to do with the danger of coming into the city, not the thanks for the...
Right? The past, yeah.
Not the danger of the trip you just finished.
I would argue that the self-evidence of not repeating yourself in the Mishnah, that it's an abbreviation. The argument that I have completed a risky trip, I've said a tefillah of thanks, and now moving along to the next event. The risky event being the trip. I mean, it's so obvious that you said...
Which trip are you talking about?
If I'm going to enter a city, I've just completed a trip.
He's asking the question that I brought up before that you proved wrong. I mean, I raised this point a few minutes ago, saying, why do you say that...
Well, I was conveniently out. Okay.
Okay, so I...
All right, you're outside.
Yeah, sorry. So I said, you missed the proof, contrary. I said, how do you know the first two... It says two prayers when you enter. Why isn't it thanks for the trip you just entered? Please make everything
you
okay.
You asked that before, yeah.
And the rabbi pointed out the Brisa, this extracted from the mission is extracted right. from the Brisa, and the Brisa said which two things you're doing when you enter. Make things be okay. And I'm sorry, I'm not saying it right.
Yeah, sure. You can't argue what the tefillot are that I mentioned, because the Brisa said explicitly, and the Mishnah comes from the Brisa.
Okay. I caught the very tail end of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, thanks for letting me come in. That's the first...
The first one is...
Let's look at it again, right?
Wait a second, just let me finish the thought here. The first one was, Yehi Ratzon, let me enter in peace.
Oh yeah.
Let me enter in peace.
So and then once you're in, thanks for letting me enter in peace. In the text says that explicitly.
Yeah.
In Yerushalayim, I mean, around Yerushalayim, it was a little different. I mean, the bandits were... As far as I know, we're surrounding Yerushalayim. But Montefiore, when at his time...
Just 150 years ago.
So the bandits were surrounding Yerushalayim, and they were afraid to go between from one place to the other.
So that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Where, right. This could be someone who lives on a farm 2 miles from the city, and in his mind, it's a dangerous thing to enter the city. In the countryside, you know, there's no evil influences.
Right.
There's no billboards, there's no newspapers, there's no radio. You enter the city, you have all these...
Oh, that's interesting. Could be the Yetzer Hara also.
Oh, my God.
For certain.
Yeah.
You have prostitution, you have different type of things going on in the city. It's... Okay, so anyway,
I think that the circumstances are not really what's important, but the time frame and the you know what comes first. And what, I mean, it's not
important. We're going on, and we're finishing the Masechet right now. Chayav Adam. This is the third line of the page, the beginning of Mishnah Hay. Chayav Adam levarech al hara'a, k'shem shehu mevarech al hatova. Translation. Obligated is a man to bless on the bad, kishem, which means just like, he blesses on the good. I'll say it again. One is obligated to bless on the bad, just like he blesses on the good. Now, what does that mean? And I'll tell you. If you take it out of context, I say you have to bless on the bad, just like you bless on the good. The question is going to be, if I take it out of context, what does just like mean? Those words, just like, right. Kishem. How much like? Does it mean completely like? I have to bless on the bad, just like on the good, completely like, no difference? I have to have the same, say the same words, the same feelings, the same emotions. I have to bless the bad with the same joy and happiness and simcha that I bless on the good. You could read like that if you take it out of context. But in context, in the context of our chapter, we know that doesn't mean that. Because we already learned that you say a different blessing for the bad than right. for the good. And we already learned that if you treat the bad like the good, it's a tfilat shav. Yes? So it can't mean, it doesn't mean, it can't mean in context that you have to bless the bad exactly like the good. It can't mean that.
Maybe also.
Right.
Okay.
All it means is what we already learned. That just like you do a blessing for the good, you also do a blessing for the bad. But it's a different blessing with a different mindset, a different emotion, a different way of looking at it. And again, the opposite is the case. If you have the same mindset, you're wrong. It's a tefillat shav. So all kashem, just like, means is that you have to say a blessing for the bad, like you have to say for the good. That's point number one. Point number two, the statement we just read in Mishnah is not coming to tell us the halacha again. We learned the halacha again already. It's really here for the next word. Shene'amar. What does that mean?
It's going to bring a pasuk.
It's going to bring a proof text. In other words, we're restating what we already learned in order to bring a proof text for it. But it's not meaning to tell us something new. It's to restate what we already learned in order to tell us the proof of it. Here we go, the proof. So in other words, this is going back basically to Mishnah Gimel, the end of Mishnah Bet, when we've got two different brachot, one for good news, one for bad news, and then Mishnah Gimel that distinguished between what's a tefillat shav, what's not, and told us you have to make the distinguishing. And now, how do you know that you have to say a bracha for the bad, even though it's a different bracha with a different mindset? The proof is, v'hafta et Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavcha u'v'chol nafshecha v'chol modecha. The first verse after Shema Yisrael. It comes from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. I take it back. I should not have translated it because we don't know what it means.
Right,
we're about to read the Mishnaic interpretation. That will make it a proof for the fact you're supposed to bless the bad. So the Midrash reads like this. B'chol levavcha, what does it mean with all your levav? It means b'shnei Yitzarecha. It means with both of your impulses, the good and the evil. So how did we get to that? This is a Mishnah, but it's a Mishnah bringing Midrash. Mm-hmm. How did the Midrash get to this? Well, if it says with all of your heart, it means literally with all of your heart, all the different parts of your heart. And to be more technical about it, the word heart is written with two vavs, even though the word really, in many cases, only has one vav, lev. Here it's levav, which is a proof, quote-unquote, that it means both parts of the lev. Hmm. Now let's ask, what do we mean both parts of the lathe? So here I would bring up the following. When I say, when Chazal say that man has a Yetzer HaTov and a Yetzer Hara, I could mean at least one of two things. I could mean that man has a basic primordial id, how do you say the word in English, libido? Life force.
That's the word.
That's what the libido, yeah. I don't know how to pronounce it. And that life force can be used for good or for bad. And the famous example I always bring, but you could use a million examples, is Bill Clinton, which I personally believe had a great, 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 great powerful life force, which was used for great good and for great bad.
Yeah.
But he's only one of a million great people that are great for good and for bad. The point is, there's one life force that can be channeled to different directions. That's what you might mean by Yetzer Tov Yetzer. In other words, it's one Yetzer, could be for good or for bad. But I think that more probably Chazal meant two different forces. Not one force that could be good, two different forces. An evil impulse and a good impulse. Now, if Chazal meant an evil impulse, pshuto kamashmo, an evil impulse and a good impulse, then what does it mean to love God with your evil impulse? That's a contradiction in terms. If it's evil, then it doesn't love God. And answer my question and see if we have other answers. It could be the simplest answer is that when Chazal say, love God with your good impulse and with your evil impulse, they simply mean that the evil impulse, erase it so that it becomes good. That's what it means, love God even with your evil impulse.
And then there's one impulse.
And then there's one. And there's the impulse that would be evil, elevated to serve God. It doesn't mean that you serve God while doing evil. There are some Hasidic thoughts like that,
right?
But we're not going into anything beyond the pshat. The pshat is that your evil impulse, unevil it. I'll say one more sentence. Everything we just said in the past 2 minutes is irrelevant to the Mishnah. It's brought here simply because it's the beginning of a midrash that's brought for its end. The matter of two impulses has nothing to do with blessing for the bad, just like you bless for the good.
No.
It's just brought here because the way of the Mishnah, when it brings a midrash, it's bring the whole unit, even though it only wants the middle or the end of the unit. Do you want to say something?
No, I was trying to hear.
Okay, so now we read on in the midrash, and we try and find why the midrash was actually brought here. So we said, "B'shnei yitzarecha, v'yitzar tov, v'yitzar ra." Period. Now the second part of the Midrash, which is going to darshan not the word levav, b'chol levav, but rather b'chol nafshecha. What does it mean? All your soul. Afilu hu notel et nafshecha. Even if he takes your soul. This is the reason why the Midrash was brought. What does it mean to love God with all your soul? With all your soul means every single percent of your soul. And if you only have 1% left, because you're dying, you still have to love God. That, I think, is the interpretation, b'chol nafshecha, all of your soul. Even if most of it is gone already, you still have to
love God.
Use the part that's left.
The soul, right?
The light.
Not the body. No.
Right, the light.
Yeah.
Thank you for the point. It means here your life. Soul in the Torah means life. It doesn't mean anything unconnected from the body.
Yeah.
Even if your life force is 90% gone, only 10% left, you still have to use all of it, even that little part that's left, to love God. There also might be a play on words here. When it says, with all of your soul, the word kol, meaning all, the word kol might be read here not as all, but kalut, which means end.
Aha, right. V'chol nafshecha afilu.
With the end of your soul.
Yeah.
But it has the same meaning. No, whatever's left of your life, you have to love God.
Same Shema.
So what we have here to play with what we heard from Steve Spitsky on Shabbat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have a Kal Vachomer, and all the more so. If there's a mitzvah to love God even when you're dying, then all the more so if you have bad news that's not so bad as dying, that you have to love God. Mm-hmm. And apparently what we're being told is the proper way to express love of God
in the face of your own death or someone else's death or other bad news is to say a blessing. It doesn't mean to be happy. It doesn't mean to be thankful. It simply means to express acknowledgement that all this comes from God. Now, we don't have time for complicated theology. It's a Mishnah class. It's not Hasidut. But there is one thing I think that's important to say. When I say that it's not about thanking God for the bad, that's my opinion. I might be wrong. It might mean you have to thank God for the bad. I tend to think not, because we made the distinguishing that a Mishnah said, don't act towards the bad like you act towards the good. So I think I learned from that you're not supposed to thank God for the bad. Acknowledge it, but not thank. And again, that word modeh could mean thanks, could mean acknowledge. So I think it's just acknowledge. Now, what does it mean to acknowledge that the bad comes from God? Here there are two different ways of looking at it. I'll just put them on the table. One is a more inclusive way of looking at it, that I literally believe that it's all part of a divine plan, that is all worked out, and everything makes sense, and everything is for the good, and everything has a purpose, and the bad that happened that came from God, I don't understand why it had to be, but it did have to be, and I acknowledge it came straight from God. That's one interpretation. My interpretation is less inclusive. My interpretation is that what I mean when I say Baruch Dayan Emet, I don't mean to say that God is a true judge and the bad that happened is His will that it had to happen like it happened. I personally don't believe that. I believe we're just saying that I acknowledge that the overall plan is good, and for the overall plan to work, it has to include bad in it. In the sense that there's no true light if there's not darkness, there's no true accomplishment if there's not stumbling, there's no true learning if there wasn't failure. There has to be bad and failure and death for there to be life and meaning and accomplishment. It's a thing I've mentioned many times in Chassidut. So in my opinion, when I say Baruch Dayan Emet, I'm not saying that God is the true judge in the case of what happened to me right now is directly from God. I don't personally believe that. It might be the pshat, but I don't. I think it's another pshat also. Pshat is the whole thing. The whole thing comes from God, and I acknowledge that God, in a certain sense, was forced, if He wanted to give us good, had to give us also bad. But not that the bad is a specific result of the divine will for this particular moment, this particular time.
Specifically, the word notel, the verb notel, is?
To take. This nitilat yadai means lift up.
Okay.
To take the hands. Okay. To say take in the sense of take away.
I wish it should really be nitilat hamayim.
Okay, let's not get into that now. Okay, so I think that is why this drasha is brought here. But it goes on. B'chol mo'odecha, right? B'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol mo'odecha, the end of the verse is, b'chol mamoncha, with all your money. How did the Chazal get to that? Because it says, with all your soul, meaning with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your modech, it literally means with all your very. With all your love, God, with all your very. What does that mean? It means love Him verily, love Him completely, absolutely. So Chazal said, if you already said your whole heart, already said your whole soul, what's left, what else could it be? For many people, the third element of your own veriness, you know, completely is mamoncha, is your money. So they darshaned that since the word mamon sounds like ma'od, and it's actually close to pshat. Because what is your very, if we already talked about your heart and your soul? It's your possessions. But then they bring a then that is not related to our issue. Our issue of saying brachot for good and bad, that's just brought here because it's part of the midrashic unit. But the next part is brought for its own sake. Devar acher, another interpretation of b'chol mo'odecha, b'chol mida u'mida, shehu moded lach, hevei modelo b'mod ma'od. Even without understanding what those words mean, just look how many words that begin with a mem.
A moded sounds like ma'od.
Right. These are four different words that are used as a play on the word ma'od. Mida, moded, modeh, mm-hmm. ma'od.
Yeah. Mida is a measure.
So what does it mean?
The measure, yeah.
First of all, again, it's a, how do you say?
Alliteration.
Alliteration. And it's not, of course, just the mem. There's also the dalet.
It's a very good alliteration.
It's a very good play on words. What it means is, b'chol midah v'midah, with every situation, shum moded lach, that he dishes out to you, hevei modelo, be acknowledging of him, ma'od mod, very much. In every situation he dishes out to you, acknowledge him absolutely. And again, I explained that this is a second interpretation of the word ma'od, not just mamon, but meaning in every situation. And it reinforced everything we've just said.
All kind of good news have come.
And bad news.
Bad news, yeah.
Especially bad news.
Good news or bad news.
You should modeh. And again, modeh doesn't necessarily mean thank. It could mean acknowledge. And acknowledge not so in the sense of this specific event comes from God, but the whole package. I acknowledge the whole package, which includes the bad as well as the good. Okay.
Question. Yes. So it seemed to, I mean, I when we said, you pointed out the two, you might say, theological interpretations. The one I want to question is the one that says God has done this bad thing explicitly right now, and I have to acknowledge that that must be right. It seemed that that is, can I say, for simplicity, contradicted by our earlier Mishnaic statement of don't confuse the good and the bad. In other words, how is that theology, which I've heard many times,
right,
reconciled with this basic, clear statement, don't confuse the good and the bad?
I'm not the person to ask that question, because I feel exactly like you do.
Okay.
But I just,
what do they say?
I can't ignore the fact that position that you don't understand is certainly the majority position in the religious society we live in.
Yeah.
Don't confuse the good and the bad.
No, the bad is
directly from Hashem,
straight from
the good.
In other words, it's the statement of Barb fell down in Israel, you know, when she was there for the summer and broke her arm, and people said, you better figure out what sin you did that caused you to, God, you know, had you fall down and break your arm.
People said that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or people say, it's for the good, it's to prevent you from doing something that you would have done and hurt yourself worse.
This is unquote.
But you know, like people are saying, oh, Ariel Bushman got sick because something hit my coat. You hear that all the time.
Yeah.
That's the wrong thing to say.
You could bring a million, 2 million, 3 million examples.
And it seems that you're saying that's a good argument. That it seems like the simple meaning of this, don't confuse the good and the bad, goes against that.
Absolutely. It clearly does to me. And it's a very, and yet...
That's ridiculous.
In other words, you have to acknowledge God in the bad, but don't confuse it with the good.
Right. Acknowledging God's control of the world, as Rabbi Schlesinger said, I mean, if we're not willing to do that, we shouldn't be in the class, right? But
how do you define control?
The minute, everything, mm-hmm. action, you know, our free will, et cetera, however you want to say that. It's okay.
That's why it's the haskach ha'petit.
Wait a second. But it's going to be hard for me to say. We have to be honest here. You're using something that I taught you to prove something else that I taught you.
Okay.
That's easy. In other words, I guess I someone else would teach the whole chapter differently.
Differently, right. I understand.
Right.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I mean, it was a sincere question on my part in the sense of, I know that there's an answer to this point. I'm not the only, you know, everyone has, it's an easy thing to say what I've said. I know that. And that people who have the other view have an answer to it. I am curious what the answer is.
So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm incapable of absorbing it.
Could it be that this text doesn't really relate directly to the question of hashgacha? It relates to how we as humans react to the situations that befall us, but it doesn't relate directly to the theology of the hashgacha. In other words, did Hashem cause the good? Did Hashem cause the bad? It may not relate to that, but the focus is the human reaction to that.
But there's a,
I don't know. There's
a clear theological element behind the statement, this too is for the good.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Something terrible happens, and a person says, this too is for the good. I don't
this
personally
is
say that.
Right.
I don't say that. I can't relate to that idea.
Yeah.
It's not, to me, everything isn't for the good in the sense of good for people. It's not, I mean, there are tragedies that happen.
Right.
That's my personal opinion, and it's and so to say, but there's a theology that says this too is for the good. People say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but our text doesn't say that.
Well, remember,
it doesn't seem to. No, it seems to be the opposite.
Remember, I read the Mishnah according to a textual emendation of one letter. Remember, it was bless the bad like the good, and the good like the bad, and I added the letter and.
Yeah.
So that is a tefillat shav, but that's not the only girsa.
Yeah,
I hear you.
But it forces you to bring Hashem into the bad. That it does. It forces you to say Baruch Tehanim. It forces you to bring Hashem into the bad.
Okay, that's easy. That's a given.
Both sides say that.
Yeah.
Neither side forces that. In other words, I accept the idea that I have to accept God's presence universally.
Right.
And be in a bad circumstance when I say God the just king.
Right.
Is that the right phrasing?
Yeah,
then that is a recognition of God's power and his acknowledgement, and I'm humbled before God. That's what that means. Mankind is humbled before God in all things. That's not the same as saying that this was good.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It is not the same as saying. Well, that's my.
No, that's true.
I'm sorry.
No. Don't say sorry. I mean, I'm happy you said that. That clarifies,
that's
true.
To say that.
And also, I want to add that what we're doing right now is a fulfillment of what I said in the first class. So we want to learn the Mishnah, which is a halachic text, as a text that is indicative of a deeper theology that it's trying to communicate to us through the language of halakha. Uh-huh. And if we don't do that, then we're really not fully understanding what the text is about.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a paradox there that those that believe that there is a reason for every action I think they're trying to elevate God to, you know, to this omnipotent place, but I think that, you know, suggesting that we can understand every action, you know, suggesting that we can understand why someone falls and breaks their arm, is elevating ourselves and diminishing God.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying by being humble and saying, you know, we don't know, you know, but just saying, you know, God, the just king and the true judge, that is really saying God is greater. We don't understand.
Yep.
So now, I want to point out that we're learning the last Mishnah of the chapter. And I want to point out how it relates. I take it back. The last Mishnah of the chapter, which was the last Mishnah of the Masechet. How it relates to the first Mishnah of the Masechet. Not only the first Mishnah, but the first theme of the Masechet. So let me remind you that this is 9 chapters of Masechet Brachot that we're learning. The first 3 chapters, the theme was Kriyat Shema, chapters 1, 2, and 3. The next 2 chapters, 4 and 5, were Tefillah, the Amidah. And then 6, 7, 8, 9 are about occasional Brachot, whether it's Berkat HaMazon, Brachot before food, after food, the lightning, the thunder, Kiddush, the wine part of Kiddush, whatever it might be. The first 3 chapters talked about Kriyat Shema, but the technical details of saying Kriyat Shema. And lo and behold, the last Mishnah comes back to Kriyat Shema. That's interesting.
No coincidence.
No coincidence. No coincidence. So after we had all those technical details of saying Shema in the first 3 chapters of the Mishnah, finally we're being told in the last Mishnah of this chapter, which is the last Mishnah of the Masechet, what Shema is really about. It's about one thing, loving God with all your heart, soul, and might. Right? Loving God under all circumstances. So it's true that this particular drasha on Kriyat Shema was brought in the context explaining to us why you bless for the bad and not just for the good. But in a larger sense, this is summing up the whole first 3 chapters of the Mishnah, which are all about the technical details of Kriyat Shema, telling us all of those technical details, they're really about one thing.
but love of God. Love of God to the end, under all circumstances, any circumstances. Okay, that's point number one. For point number two, we go to the continuation of this Mishnah. You ready? Lo yakel adam et rosho keneged shar hamizrach shehu mechuvan keneged beit kodshei hakodeshim. Translation, lo yakel adam. Shouldn't light a man his head. Don't behave lightheadedly. Lo yakel adam et rosho. The word yakel means to make kakal, to make light. Don't make your head light. Don't act with frivolity. Frivolity. Levity. Keneged shar hamizrach. When you're facing, keneged means you're facing shar hamizrach, the eastern gate. The eastern gate of what?
Beit HaMikdash.
Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah.
Just think of Beit HaMikdash, the eastern gate. No blackboard here. The eastern gate is the one facing the Mount of Olives. If you're on the Mount of Olives and you look into the eastern gate, you can look straight through the gates of the courtyard, and then the gate, the curtain separating the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKodeshim, you're looking straight into the Kodesh HaKodeshim with a clear view if all the gates are open.
Yeah.
So specifically when you are on the Mount of Olives, facing the Shar Mizrach, you shouldn't behave with levity.
You're facing west.
You're facing west.
Yeah.
You're in the east facing west. Shehu mechuvan keneged beit kodshei hakodeshim. Because it is mechuvan, it is focused, it is aligned, keneged, facing, beit kodesh hakodeshim, the holy of holies. Lo yikanes laharabait b'maklo. You should not enter the harabait, the temple mount, with your walking stick. Right. Uva man alo, or with his shoes. Uva fun dato, or with his money pouch. Uva vak shal raglav, or with the dust on your feet. So take your shoes off, wash your feet, don't enter with your...
Funduse is a belt. What
with your money belt.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Velo yasenu kapandaria, and don't make it a shortcut. As if you're walking from the Mount of Olives to the new city, don't walk through Har Habayit. Or kika mikal v'chomer, and spitting all the more so. As if I said all this, of course you can't spit on Har Habayit. Now look at me. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. What is this doing here? We're learning Masechet Brachot. Who's talking to the Beit HaMikdash? What's going on? What Masechet are we learning? This is really hard. We have here a list of laws about respecting the Beit HaMikdash. And we have to ask ourselves, why did Rabbi Yehuda Nasin put it here? Well, I have an answer. It's an exciting answer. Let's read it again. Lo yakel adam et rosho. A man shouldn't make his head lightheaded. That sounds exactly like a Mishnah we learned a year and a half ago in this Masechet. You were here, right? And Mr. Galler might have been here, and Martin was here. So those of you who have the whole Mishnah in front of you, and some of you, of course, don't, we are looking in the fifth perek. The fifth perek. And the fifth perek begins, Ein omdim lehitkalel ela mitoch kovid rosh. We don't stand to daven except out of kovid rosh. Heaviness of head. Seriousness. And those words, kovid rosh, that's exactly what we're learning right now. It says, don't...
It's the opposite of COVID rosh.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't have non-COVID rosh
right.
When you are looking at the Shar Mizrach. But it's not only the concept of Kovid Rosh and Kalut Rosh that reminds me of chapters 4 and 5 of this chapter, but look at the next word. So I said, it says, Lo Yakel Adam et Rosho Keneged, when you're facing the eastern gates. That word facing, Keneged, appeared again and again and again and again in chapter 4 of the Mishnah. I'll just show you, if anyone's looking, chapter 4, Mishnah 5, I'll read it to you. It says, Yechaven et libo keneged beit kodesh hakodeshim. You should focus your heart when you're davening keneged, facing the kodesh hakodeshim. Mm-hmm. Words, when you're davening sharet filah, you have to think of the kodesh hakodeshim, and the word is keneged, as if you're facing it. That matter of keneged kodesh hakodeshim is exactly what it says here at the end of our chapter, when it says, when you're keneged Sharon Mizrach, which is facing the Kodesh HaKodeshim, don't behave lightheadedly. And then it says, I'm back to the end of our Masechet, why shouldn't you behave lightheadedly when you are keneged the Eastern Gate? Because it is michuvan, keneged, facing the Beit Kodesh HaKodeshim. That word michuvan, to focus or to face, again, when we talked about tefillah, they always said, you should yechaven et libo, you should focus your heart on the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The same words. Let me summarize what I'm saying. We said that this last Mishnah of the Masechet began talking about the essence of Kriyat Shema, loving God under all circumstances. We said that relates to the first three chapters of the Masechet that were about Kriyat Shema. I said chapters 4 and 5 of this Masechet talk about Tefillah. And now it turns out that this next part of the ninth chapter at the very end has all these words that are about chapters 4 and 5 of our Masechet. Chapters 4 and 5 that talk about Tefillah. So now you have to make the connection for me. Why is it that chapters 4 and 5 of the Masechet that talk about Tefillah are hinted to at the end of the Masechet in this discussion of the Beit HaMikdash? Tefillah and Beit HaMikdash. What's the connection?
Remember
that we talked about the fact that when all those laws of Tefillah in chapters 4 and 5, many come to are related to the fact that Tefillah is keneged korbanot. Tefillah was replacement for, or it is parallel to, the Mikdash. And here we have, at the end of our Masechet, first it talking about Shema, which was parallel to the first three chapters, then it talks about the Mikdash, with all these hints to the wording of chapters 4 and 5, which are about the Tefillah. And therefore, what I think it's saying is, after we talk to you about Tefillah, still don't think that Tefillah takes the place of Korbanot and the Mikdash, so that the Mikdash is kaput. No. This is telling us that even when the Mikdash is destroyed, don't behave with Kalut Rosh towards it, and don't use it as a shortcut, even though it's been plowed under by the Romans. Right? This is after the destruction of the Temple. The statement is that Tefillah takes the place of Korbanot, and it takes the place of Mikdash, but the Mikdash is still, at least on our hearts, the focus of everything, and it's not to be behaved towards with any type of Kalut Rosh or any type of disgrace or zilzul. And I always forget how you say zilzul in English.
Degradation?
Lack of respect.
It's interesting to juxtapose this to Har Sinai, because we have sources explicitly to tell us that Har Sinai, after Mamad Har Sinai, after the Torah is given, the animals can go up there and everything.
Okay, so this is not like Har Sinai. Okay, so now, what we're going to do now is the end of this Mishnah, and you can already guess what it's going to talk about. If this Mishnah, at the end of chapter 9, has three parts. The first part is about Kriyat Shema, relating to the first three chapters of the Masechet. The second third is about the Beit HaMikdash, which relates to the next two chapters of the Masechet. Then the third part of it is going to relate to the last four four chapters, which are about the brachot. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Kol chotmei brachot shayu b'mikdash hayu omrim min olam. All of the signatures of the brachot that were in the mikdash, we used to say min olam. In other words, whenever you said God's name, you add the words min olam. Baruch ata Hashem min olam. Blessed is God of the world. Min ha'olam of the world.
Oh, yeah, ha'olam. It's interesting.
Oh, no, wait a second.
Okay.
No, wait a second. You're just one line ahead of me. Mi shekilkalu aminim v'amru ein olam ela had hidkinu shiu omri min olam v'ad olam. From when the sectarians destroyed, in other words, when they went wrong, when the sectarians, meaning the Sadducees, went wrong, and they said there's no world except for this one, Hidkinu, the rabbis instituted, that they will say, of the world and to the world. And they're getting, there are two words. In other words, Baruch Ata Hashem min olam vad olam. God in this world and the next. So there's some. This is hard to understand. Why is this here? It's something about brachot and something about telling us about the overarching influence of God. There's no end to God's influence. God's influence even continues after our death. Basically, that's what it's saying. And I think it's the most radical statement of what the last four chapters of the Masechet said, which is bring God into your life. It means bring God, that God is in your life, completely, absolutely, even beyond your life.
Uh-huh.
And those things, the dirt on your feet and the belt and the staff, those are, I think, also images of future and past and power. The dirt is something that's from the, that you picked up in the past. You know, the money and the staff you'll need on your way in the future.
Uh-huh. Very interesting. That's more Hasidic than I think. Then. Okay.
Maybe lie on the heart.
Okay, on the same theme of bringing God and remembering God and talking about God's presence all over from this world to the next are the last six lines, last five lines. Hidkinu shiye adam shu'el et shalom chaviro b'shem. They instituted that a man should greet his fellow with God's name. When you say, how are you? You should say, how are you? God be with you. And this, it's the idea we've been talking about in the last four chapters of the Masechet. We bless God for good events, for bad events. We bless God for the thunder and lightning, for historical events, for human events, for natural events. And you should even bring God into your interaction with your fellow. Shenemar, as it says, V'hine Boaz Bami Beit Lechem. This is a verse from the book of Ruth. Behold, Boaz was coming from Bethlehem. V'yomeh lekotrim, and he said to the reapers, Hashem imachem, God be with you. V'yomru lo yivarechech Hashem, and the response was, may God bless you. They didn't just say, hello, how are you? They said, God be with you, may God bless you. V'omer. Another verse also, in the same vein, Hashem imcha gibor hayel. I think this was Gidon, if I'm not mistaken, in the book of Judges. God be with you, you gibor hayel, you hero of the soldiers. Same idea, that when you say hello to someone, you mention God's name. The Omer, and another verse, al tavoz ki zakna imecha, which I think they're taking to mean, it's from the book of Proverbs, don't be disgraced, no, the English word is don't.
Shame.
Well, shame.
Discount.
Disgrace.
Right, don't discount, thank you.
Discount.
Don't discount the old ageness of your mother, which means ancient tradition. Don't discount ancient tradition. Uh-huh. And the thing is that Gidon and Boaz, they had greeted their fellows with God's name. Apparently, according to the commentators, what happened is this tradition fell by the wayside. Huh.
of greeting people with God's name. Why did it fall by the wayside? Because people were afraid of using God's name in vain.
Mm.
So they took God out of their life. Mm.
Wow.
That's a very, very common dialectic. Because I'm going to say this grossly, too much religion leads to superstition. But when you try to pull it back to away from superstition, you're liable to go to the pole of secularism. What does it mean here when it said hitkinu, the rabbis instituted that we should greet our friends with God's name? In other words, the rabbis had instituted because they had to counter the approach that said we can't use God's name because God is too beyond. No, the rationalistic approach, if you will, had to be countered. And the rabbi said, you can, and you should use God's name in greeting your fellows. The idea, again, being it's a very powerful way of, just like a bracha, bringing God into your life, even though there's a danger involved.
Mm-hmm.
And the Masechet ends by saying, V'omer et lasot l'shem hefero toratecha, which is a verse from Tehillim, from Psalms. What it means in context is not important. Rather, Rabbi Natan changes the order of the words. Instead of Eit Lasot Lashem Hefero Torotecha, rather Rabbi Natan says Hefero Torotecha Eit Lasot Lashem. What that probably means is, despite notions that you might have, what it probably means is Hefero Torotecha, they violated your Torah. Eit Lasot Lashem, it's time to do for God. In other words, because they violated your Torah, therefore it's time to do for God. It's because there have been violations of the Torah, and in a limited sense, we're talking about the fact that people have stepped back from bringing God into their lives, whether it's the Sadducees who completely kept God out of the next world, and even perhaps kept God out of this world, or whether it's those who are afraid to use God's name in vain and therefore didn't use God's name at all, the rabbis come and say, no, people have violated the Torah, it's time to do for God. We have to make all these institutional takanot, all of these laws that bring God back into our lives. It's talking specifically about what we talked about in this Mishnah, but also it goes back to the last four chapters. All of these brachot are completely and absolutely inventions of Chazal. What right do they have to bring God into your daily life? And the answer is, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. That the rabbis have the authority and the responsibility to institute these takanot, even though they're not in the Torah, because they're trying to reconstitute Judaism that's lost its center. The Beit Hamikdash has been destroyed, and we have to have a new pole, new focus. A new focus is bringing God into the life of the individual when we don't have the Mikdash. That's what the last four chapters of the Masechet were about, and that is justified and explained here in the last third of the last Mishnah, just like the second of the three-thirds of the last Mishnah talked about the second of the three-thirds of the Masechet, and just like the first third of this last Mishnah talked about the first third of the whole...
Parallels.
So it's parallel. And this last Mishnah is justifying, explaining, giving the final cherry at the top of the cake of the three parts of the Masechet.
What would the greeting be if you were to include God in your greeting?
It would be Adonai Imachem, Adonai Itcha. May God be with you.
That's a greeting, or that's a...
Yes, it's a greeting. We don't do that. Just like it happened after the time of Waz, people shied away from that. Mm-hmm. So today also we don't do that.
We say Baruch Hashem,
that
Hashem should be blessed.
But we're afraid to use God's name.
Oh, that's why we say Hashem.
Humorously, the Muslims do that as a matter of course.
Yeah, they do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Allah should be with you. Chodach HaFez in Persian.
My Persian's pretty weak.
Okay. We're on the way to Learning Fest.
Uh-huh.